RadioStPete.com presents Job Talk with Dean Logan. Job Talk with Dean Logan is presented in part by Eagle Datagistics. Eagle Datagistics is one of the premier Oracle Gold partners on the East Coast. Eagle Datagistics, providing hardware and software sales, data recovery, DBA services, and recruiting. With more than 10 years in business, in downtown St. Petersburg, it's Eagle Datagistics. Now, let's go live to our studio on the 10th floor of the Plaza Tower in downtown St. Petersburg, the offices of Eagle Datagistics. Now, with Job Talk, here's Dean Logan.
Thank you, Joe Bordell, and welcome everyone to Job Talk. I'm your host, Dean Logan, and this is the only radio program in Tampa Bay dedicated to talking about jobs. My guests are the CEOs, human resources professionals, and entrepreneurs of the area, big and small companies from a variety of industries, as well as leaders in government. And one of the goals of this program is to allow listeners to get to know these companies and the people who run them in a personal way. If there's a CEO or skilled professional listening to Job Talk who's considering moving their company or family and is looking for several locations throughout the country, this program will help you with that decision and will help you with understanding what Tampa Bay and St. Petersburg is all about. There's a lot to consider, certainly, when looking for a new community. As we've explored in the past shows, the arts in St. Petersburg and Tampa Bay are an important part of the culture here. The art community is growing, and one of the leaders in the art community is my guest today, Mark Ehling. Mark is the owner of MGA Sculpture Studios in St. Petersburg. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
So, Mark, thanks very much for coming here on this beautiful foggy day here in St. Pete.
Yeah, pretty wild being up here on the 10th floor. It's like being in the clouds.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful, though. And so anyway, I want to let the people, let's start out by telling our audience about yourself, where you're from, and that kind of stuff.
Well, I grew up mostly in Colorado. I was born actually in D.C., and my father was a military doctor, so we moved around. My family moved around quite a bit when I was very young. I lived in Hawaii for 3 years and then moved to Colorado when I was 4 years old, and he became chief of dermatology for the Army, and the family stayed in Colorado. I lived there until I was about 21, and then got into undergraduate school and kind of went from there.
And so what started your interest in art?
Well, you know, it's something that I connected to at a very young age. My family was very engaged in the arts, and my parents were very encouraging. Like many kids, I wanted to be a professional football player, all right. You know. But we always were playing around with materials and things like that. I had an older brother who is a very, very talented artist, and he currently makes his living painting. He's a landscape painter. Mm-hmm. So he was a great role model. But I had a really pivotal experience at a very young age that made me feel connected to the creative process. Elementary school art class and making stuff and playing around with clay, and I had this transformative experience. It's probably, you know, second or third grade, like 7, 8 years old, and just had that sensation of being outside of my body and being connected to something greater than myself through that creative process. And I still have the piece that I was working on at the time, and I still vividly remember that sensation of making that object and being transformed and transfixed by that experience. And
what was that object, by the way?
Well, it's a silly little thing, the kind of thing you make as a kid, uh-huh. But I was making a playground, and I had a little slab of clay, and I was making these objects and imagining myself walking down this path and interacting with these objects as I was creating them. And it was like being in that place. Like I was just a little tiny, you know, scale wise, I had reduced, and I was actually able to visualize myself in that place. And it was a really, really magical experience, and one that still gives me goosebumps to think about. And as I got older, I had that kind of experience repeated through engaging in the creative process, the act of making things. And it became apparent to me that that was something that I wanted to reproduce as frequently as possible in my life. So I set about constructing my life so that I could do that as often as possible. And that the studio became very much like my shrine. And it has some spiritual or religious-like connotations for me, in that the creative process is very much a connecting experience that makes me feel connected to something bigger than I am.
And you actually have a formal education as well, though.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I honestly wanted to play professional football until I was 17 years old and realized, you know, I just wasn't made for it. And, a little bit of soul searching, I entered into undergraduate school thinking, to be kind to my parents and not go into the arts directly. I was going to go into graphic design. And my first semester of undergraduate school, I took a sculpture class and a graphic design class, and hated graphic design and loved sculpture. And there was no turning back after that. But, you know, I started out, as I said, very young, and every opportunity that I had in high school, every time I had a free class period, I would take – we had a great ceramics program in the high school that I went to, and – I would take independent study ceramics and just make sculpture. And I started doing that at a very young age. Once I got a sculpture class at the college level, there was no turning back. And I'll apologize to my parents now. That's the way it worked out, you know. But actually, I figured out a way to make a living doing it. So it's been very, very positive from that respect.
And was the program that you went to at Washington University, is that a good program, would you say?
The program at WashU was where I did my master's work. So if you don't mind, I'll step back just a little bit, because there are a couple really important things that seminal moments, you could say, for how I got to where I am. And I bounced around a lot in undergraduate school. I went to three different programs and was unsettled and was looking for the right experience. And I ended up finishing up my undergraduate degree in Seattle at University of Washington. And I started working for the Seattle Opera right out of school. And that was a really amazing experience, working in that professional shop environment. I learned more about the creative process and more about how to take an idea and manifest it in three dimensions, the reality of that process, through working for theater, than I did in undergraduate school. I learned about how a scale rule works and how to take drawings and do side views and front views and transfer that information into full scale, and how to manifest an idea, and not just have ideas, but how to bring them into being.
And so you came to St. Pete in when? When did you arrive here?
Well, I did my master's work in St. Louis and ended up sticking around in that town for about 15 years. And I set up my studio there. That's where I started MGA Sculpture Studio. The environment was really good for business. It's cheap space and lots of work. And I ended up in 2005, I was breaking up a business partnership, and I came to the realization as I was packing up my studio that I could be moving it across town or across the country, that the real effort was in getting it all packed up and ready to go. And I had a job on the Eastern Seaboard, and I took the opportunity to drive down the East Coast and took about 3 weeks and checked out a number of different cities in the process of doing that. And I fell in love with St. Petersburg for a variety of reasons.
It's easy to do.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great city.
So tell me, though, I'm interested about the other kind of locations you were looking at. You know, other people listening to the show, too, may have an interest in coming to St. Pete or looking at other locations. And what was the big attraction? What finally made up your mind to come here?
Well, there were a variety of considerations. And, you know, I started a business making sculpture. I have a commission-driven sculpture studio. And that required a certain type of demographic as far as the city was concerned that I felt would support that. A large percentage of the clients that I had developed I felt would move with me. In other words, that was the kind of work that where my business was set up was not going to impact my ability to perform those my skill set for them.
You can ship your art anywhere.
Yeah, and they were the types of projects that had larger budgets and longer durations. And, you know, I was working with developers and things like that who were located in other cities. And we were working on projects that were in other cities. So shipping and all those right. things were being considered anyway. So there was some of the client base that was for smaller projects, quicker turnarounds. And I knew I was going to lose those clients. So that kind of thing was in the mix and the consideration. The other thing was the availability of materials and the availability of working space and access to international airport and right. those kinds of things. I had to have enough of an industrial base and enough size in the city that I was considering that I would be able to get everything that I needed in order to do what I do. Because in commission-driven sculpture, we deal with a lot of different types of materials and processes, and the availability of those materials is critical. So that was key. And the third factor was, you know, how that community engaged in the arts and how they felt about the creative side of culture and community. And St. Petersburg had a really good feeling to it. The energy was good, and there was... It was early in the stage of how the city was developing creatively. This was 10 years ago, and there were a number of creative entities already in place who had done a lot of paving the way, so to speak. But I felt a good energy, basically.
Mm-hmm. And so so let's talk about where you are right now, your studio. What kind of you mentioned commission-based studio.
That's yeah, how
you,
yeah.
And so the types of projects that you've worked on, I've seen some of, if you look at your website, some are pretty incredible. When I visited there, you had some big big statues, and you're working on some interesting work there.
Yeah, you know, I've always had a love for figurative work, representational work in that respect, and I happen to have an aptitude for that kind of, I have a skill set for that kind of work, and I've done a lot of representational sculpture figures and things like that. I'm working on a commission right now for a project in Tennessee. It's four different figures. And we did a Abraham Lincoln a year and a half ago for the same client, and that was sort of a test piece. And they've got a number of sculptures that they want for this park that they're putting together. So we're working on four of them right now. I've got two of them just about done, and I've got two more that are in process for that project. And that's one facet of the kind of work that we do, and that would fall into the castable mediums category.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the other types of work that you do there?
Well, you know, within castable mediums, that's, you know, if you're not familiar with the sculptural process, that means basically that we're making a pattern and we're pulling a mold off of that pattern, and then we're casting a material into that mold. And that casting can be anything from cement or fiberglass or plaster or bronze, wax for bronze, basically. But anything that you can cast like that. We do plastics and things like that as well. Generally, you know, depends on what the budget of a project is and what the application of the end use of what we're making is, what we end up casting in. But that's one side of what we do fabrication-wise. The other side is metal fabrication. We have a full welding set up in the studio, and we do some material processing there. Some of it I farm out, because a lot of projects that we do require some bigger steel. So if I've got great big stuff, you know, 6-inch square tube that needs to be rolled or something like that, there's a couple different fabricators across the country. Like, for, we did a project recently that's over in Tampa, and we had tubing rolled over in Tulsa Tube in Oklahoma. And then that raw material that's they roll to a specification or put a circumference on the tube, and then we bring it in and we cut it up and build jigs and put it all together. And, you know, we work with structural engineers for how we put these things together. This is like a large public art commission type piece.
Right. And so did you work with engineers when you were, and so for the people listening, you did some wonderful work at the new Sundial. Yes. You did the bronze dolphin statues.
Mm-hmm.
And so that looks like it's something that you worked with engineers. It just kind of looks in the way it's been sitting in the... Do they move and all, anything like that? But
yeah, that was a really fun project. And, you know, every one of these has different variables to it,
yeah.
Depending upon the client that you're dealing with and the application. You know, that particular project is an outdoor fountain area, and they had hired a designer from California. His name was Rene, and I'm blanking his last name right now. I apologize. But he did an amazing job designing that plaza area and the sundial itself, and they brought me in to execute the dolphins. So I had some creative freedom on how the dolphins were shaped and how we executed that aspect of it. But in that particular instance, there's a lot of collaboration design-wise, and then the fabrication process and the materials and those sorts of things I get to have some input on. And that was a lot of fun, that project, because it's gotten a really good public response.
Oh, sure. Well, it's beautiful. You did a great job. That's,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so anyone wanting to see some of Mark's work, just check out Sundial. Now, you also do small commissions as well.
Yes.
What's an example of a small commission?
Well, we recently did a figure for a private client, and he came into the studio on a second Saturday, which is something that we sponsor through the Warehouse Arts District. We'll probably talk a little bit about in a few minutes. But he he'd been looking for a sculpture for the living room of his condo in downtown St. Pete. And he is a very avid martial artist, and he's very dedicated to Tai Chi. He's a grandmaster of Tai Chi. And been looking for a sculpture that would work for their home, and saw what we were doing at MGA and commissioned us to make a piece specifically for him. And we went through a process where we basically developed an idea together, and he wanted to represent that process of movement that's integral to the martial art of Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
And so I documented him in his practice, and then we did a series of maquettes, which are small studies of the process. And we fine-tuned the idea for the sculpture and tried to break it down into its just most base elements of movement, and ended up with a piece that was very abstract in a lot of ways. If you didn't know where we started and just saw the end product, you might not even see the figure in it. But it represented that sense of the human form in movement in a very specific sequence of movements. And that was a really fun challenge.
It sounds very similar to one of the limited editions, one-of-a-kind things that we have in the office here.
Yeah, those are a suite of pieces that I did for a project. And they're based on the idea, they're called the Messengers, and they're based on the idea of angels and what they represent and the human form. Those pieces are special to me because they incorporate two of my favorite things, one being the female human form and the other being wings. You know, I've always been fascinated by wings, the idea of flight, and that creatures can engage in the air and lift their mass off of the ground using feathers. It's pretty wild, you know? So the structure of wings for me is really, really fascinating.
Great. So you've also done some work, some film work.
Yeah, you know, when I was out in Seattle, I learned a lot about stage scenery and that sort of thing. And, commercial scenery is a whole category of fabrication. And during the process of getting my graduate degree, I worked for a number of commercial scenery companies, and that type of work tends to lend itself directly to scenery in general. And one of the other opportunities within that category is film work. And I was very fortunate to get a job. It has a kind of a funny story. I was out in Lake Tahoe, and I was working on some murals for Mike Love, believe it or not, of the Beach Boys. He was building a house in Incline Village. And I had an extra week while we were out there painting those murals. And I went out to San Francisco to see what kind of work was going on, because I loved the idea of living out there. And I Had a couple contacts and ended up getting a job working on a film project for a movie called What Dreams May Come, which turned out to be a pretty significant film and won a couple of Oscars and was an amazing experience to be engaged in a project of that scope.
That was a movie with Robin Williams
and
Cuba Gooding, I think.
Yeah, and that actually won an Oscar for set design, which was a fun part. I was involved in that aspect of it. And, you know, I have to be very clear about this. There are thousands of people that get involved in a film of that scope. I think that the budget on that film was $200 million. They spent $100 million on production and then $100 million on post-production. And if you've seen that movie, the post-production on it is absolutely incredible. It's one of the first films where virtually every frame of the film was gone through in post and modified by computer artists.
Great. So one of the things that I really want to talk about is you are bringing where you are right now, you're in a sort of like a compound. I guess
sure.
That's the best
that's a
way
good
to
word for it.
Call it. And so you rent space out there to other artists?
Well,
is that kind of how that works?
We're going to be doing that. You know, I've been in St. Pete for 10 years, and I moved down here with a job in tow, and I had owned my studio in St. Louis, and I thought, you know, I've got to get space quickly. I set up a 6-month lease initially with the owner of the Ace Recycling Compound, which is in what is now known as the Warehouse Arts District. And I was the only artist in that compound at the time. And my plan was to work through this project and then find a building and buy it and you know, move my business. And things didn't quite work out that way. And over the past 10 years, you know, more and more artists had been started moving into that neighborhood. And initially, there were just a couple folks. Dan Painter was one of the first ones, and he's a very talented sculptor and painter. And the St. Pete Clay Company was at the train station, now the Morion Center for Arts. They were in place when I came into town. And Eric Higgs, who's another sculptor now, runs Lumastream, which is an LED lighting company. He was in place in town in that neighborhood, and there's, you know, that's where the warehouses were. Artists are drawn to inexpensive big space, and you know, I've got 25-foot ceilings in my studio, and I need those ceiling heights. You know, we design pieces that are very large scale at times. So It was a good space for me. I ended up staying there, and as I saw the neighborhood developing, and we got into the Duncan McClellan moved into the neighborhood about 5 years ago, and he brought with him a significant amount of energy and resources, and he's done some amazing things to bring attention to the area.
Raised the bar quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, he really did, and we started developing this idea. You know, there were dozens and dozens of artists in that area at that point in time when Duncan came in. And
and it wasn't called the Warehouse Arts District at that time.
No, it wasn't. And a group of us got together and sort of coined the name of the Warehouse Arts District, and we formed an association and a 501c3. And we saw some things happening as we started bringing more energy into the neighborhood, and we started through the association. We started a trolley tour, and that, you know, Duncan was bringing in thousands of people on second Saturdays for Art Walk, and it became an issue of we need to be able to move these people around because they're hanging out at Duncan's, and it actually became almost counterproductive. Because it was just a big party, and it was great to have the energy and the interest in the arts, but there were a lot of different studios in the neighborhood. The infrastructure was not great at the time, and it was in a part of town that was a little rough around the edges, and we saw the potential to rent a trolley and move people around the neighborhood and show them that there's other artists and other arts organizations back in that neck of the woods. So through the process of doing that, it drew a lot of attention to the neighborhood. And it's wonderful that, you know, it's helped to revitalize that part of the city, but it creates a challenge for the artists in the area because it starts to get expensive for them as developers come in and they see that creative energy and they want to be a part of it and they start buying up properties and the values start going up.
Mm-hmm. Kind of moves out the artists at some point.
Right? Well, you know, this model has been repeated all over the country over and over again. What happens is creatives come into an area and they put their energy into it, and it develops interest in it, and development follows that, and ultimately the result of that is artists tend to get pushed out. And we saw this happening in the Warehouse Arts District. So we started talking early on about, you know, what could be done about this. How do we create a sustainable arts community? What can be done to break this mold? And the compound that I was in, or am in, is 50,000 square feet of warehouse space. Much of it is sitting completely vacant, and it's on 2.7 acres. And I had developed a pretty good relationship with Pete Denny, who is the current owner. He and his sister own the property. Well, actually, they no longer own it. The Warehouse Arts District does. We closed just last week.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. But in the course of doing this, we realized, you know, if we could get a hold of this piece of property, and, you know, I personally didn't have the resources to do it. This is a big chunk of property. It's 2.7 acres. And, you know, personally, I would have loved to have been able to own the building that I was in, but it just was not economically feasible for me to do this. And actually, Duncan and McClellan and I had a conversation at one point in time. I was talking to him about buying a studio, and I had been looking around for a building that was more along the size of what I needed, about 4,000 square feet, and how to get the deal put together. And I was telling him what a big pain in the behind it was to move my studio, because I've got a lot of stuff in there. It's 4,000 square feet, and it's full of stuff. And you know, there's a lot of equipment involved in making sculpture. So, sure. You know, he said something really interesting to me. He said, do you have to own it? You know, in order for you to be here, be in your building, do you have to own it? And I thought that that was a really interesting paradigm. It shifted the way that I was thinking about it. And I was talking with another one of the board members for the Warehouse Arts District, and we sort of had this realization that we could utilize the 501c3 that we had formed for the Warehouse Arts District Association and buy the property through a nonprofit. And I didn't have to own it. What I was really interested in was the security, knowing that that building wasn't going to be pulled out from under me when my lease expired, when the owner decided to sell to a higher bidder. You know, that what I really wanted was that security, that the knowledge that it wasn't all going to get yanked out from underneath me. And I think that that was the same concern that many artists have. So we realized that we could set up a 501c3 entity through that entity and keep the costs low so that we can bring artists in and keep them in place, because we can bring that property online below the regular market rate. And that was a piece of the puzzle that was really integral. You know, we've purchased the property through donation, which keeping investment out of it has been key to making all of this work. We've got some very good business minds connected to this project. And, you know, the way that we've made the numbers work is to keep the costs down through donation. And now that we've got the property in hand, through our capital campaign, we raised $350,000. And that was enough to put down money. And Pete, the owner, was kind enough to finance the property for the first 5 years at a very, very good rate. So we've got a five-year period here to get as much of it built out as possible, to get funds together through grants and additional donations, fundraising, that we can get it built out and get artists in it. And then the revenue from the rents will be able to keep the thing up and running, so it can be self-perpetuating and self-sufficient.
So does this project have a name?
Currently, we call it the Enclave, and that's a name that's been very effective for us for the fundraising, this first fundraising portion of it. But I, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the arts community in St. Petersburg. This is one facet of a multifaceted arts community. It's exploding here. There's truly a renaissance in the arts. The Kenwood neighborhood and the Old Southeast have applied for what's called the enclave status, which is a designation by the area's municipalities, the city, the county, and I believe even the state, where they can take that neighborhood and allow the residents to sell directly out of their homes. And I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't know all of the ins and outs, but suffice it to say that there's an enclave designation for these neighborhoods. And right after we began our capital campaign, these neighborhoods were granted this designation. And us calling what we're doing an enclave is actually confusing people a little bit. Okay. And we're going to be revisiting the name of okay. the compound or the enclave. And we're actually going to be entering into a series of meetings with the public and with artists and pulling all of these variables together now that we're doing this in earnest, and we want to get as much input from the creative community as possible mm-hmm. as we move forward. In fact, we've got a meeting on the 7th at 5 o'clock at Softwater Studios, which is on the compound, and we're going to be talking through some of these details of what the needs of the arts community are.
That's great. And so, you know, one of the things, do you employ people in your studio there?
You know, we generate a lot of jobs, and basically how it works is I function on a job-by-job basis. So I bring in creatives who basically they have their own businesses. They come in and help me on projects.
But their skill set fits whatever project you're working
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and, you know, also it's been very helpful in that the Morian Center for Clay has been bringing in artists in residence through their ceramics program for the entire time that I've been down here, and I've been able to give work to a number of those artists in residence. So that's an aspect of the community helping itself out and sharing resources and things like that.
So that ties into the one thing that I always ask my guests, which is about interviewing for a job with your group there. So if somebody an artist was to come and apply for a position, I don't know if they do that, but if they do, you know, what one piece of advice would you be able to give them?
Wow, that's a really good question. And it's, you know, I have a very, what I believe I have a unique perspective on what it is to make a living being an artist, because I basically created my job title, commission-driven sculpture. Most people think of, when they think of an artist, they think of someone working in their space, making stuff and then selling that stuff at a gallery. And that is the general model that people perceive of, you know, they have this outside source that is handling their marketing and taking a commission to sell their work. And my work is very different than that, in that I'm, as a business, am handling all of those aspects of what I do. And I call it the penance of the creative process, being able to do your own books and right. and manage your marketing and all of those things. But and I'm getting to your answer here. For me, I think the most important thing that an artist can do is identify what their skill set is and figure out what they have to offer that has value. It takes a long time in any endeavor, but particularly in creative endeavors, to get people to pay you for your ideas. Mm-hmm. Tangible skills are where you start. You got to know how to do things. So once I figured out how to make stuff and how to use tools and equipment and how to process materials, then I had a skill set that I could market. And I think that all creative endeavors work that way. Someone like me who has the potential to bring in outside help, what I'm looking for is skills. I want somebody who knows how to do things and a good open mind and a willingness to be reliable and dependable and right. come to work on time and all of those sure. kinds of things, which are people, I think, that gets underestimated. You know, people in the arts in particular think that there's this attitude there, everything's laid back and cool and, you know, come in when you want and that sort of yeah. thing. And that isn't how it works. The reality is it's a business. Yep. And you got clients that have deadlines, and you've got money changing hands, and there's responsibility associated with all of those variables.
One of the other things I really like to let our listeners understand, too, is the relationship that the city has with you. How have they treated you during all of this?
You know, the city has been really great in the way that they have engaged the arts community. And it, don't get me wrong, it has taken some time to get to this point. And I can tell you some stories about early on in the city. You know, 10 years ago, Eric Higgs, one of the pioneers, had a very difficult time getting an occupancy permit to run his business out of his studio. And it was because the city didn't have a paradigm in which to assess what he was trying to do. It was a business model that they were not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And Bob Stackhouse and Carol Mickett had a similar problem with what they did with their building down off the edge of the old Southeast neighborhood. These folks were early pioneers for the arts. You know, the Morian Center for the Clay, at that time St. Pete Clay, had the same problem getting their kilns permitted. The closest thing the city had on its books to compare those kilns to were pizza ovens. Hmm. They didn't know how to assess them as far as fire risk and those kinds of things. So we see right now the city making huge efforts. And it's not just financial efforts. And they have been very helpful with the Warehouse Arts District financially. They've stepped up and given us $75,000 towards our project. So they're doing what they can financially to help the arts community. But it's more than that. There's an attitude that has evolved in the city, and that they recognize that the arts represent an economic driver, and that there is potential growth through the marketing and promotion of the arts. And we're seeing a lot of participation and interest in from the city in the arts right now. It's great.
I'm sure our listeners are going to be happy to hear about that. You know, and it's a story I hear all the time. So this is just apparently a wonderful place to encourage artists and entrepreneurs. So thanks. Just one final set of questions here. Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned about Second Saturday Art Walk. You know, tell me a little bit about that.
It's Art Walk is an event that has been happening in the city of St. Pete, I believe, for the better part of 20 years. And it was initially started by the Downtown Arts Association. Downtown Arts Association was one of the early arts organizations that represented mostly galleries and some individual artists in the arts community. And they got together and formed Second Saturday Art Walk. And that Art Walk allowed people, you know, all the galleries would have openings, and they would coordinate their efforts and put together a map, and it would give people who were interested in the arts an opportunity to get out and about and see what was going on in the arts community. You know, that had evolved over many years, and it had lost a little bit of energy, and I think the recession hit the city pretty darn hard. Mm-hmm. And it was still being held together. Jeff Shore has been really critical in keeping the Downtown Arts Association active and keeping Art Walk alive. But, you know, Duncan McClellan, when he came to town and he started promoting his event, and he got engaged in social media, and very progressive of Duncan, and he brought on a social media person, Tracy Kennard, Your Virtual Footprint, and they got the numbers up using social media at Duncan's, and it was, as I mentioned earlier, it was became a really buzzing, hopping event to go to Duncan's on Second Saturday Art Walk. But, you know, the rest of the arts community, I think, was lagging a little bit at that time. So through the help of Jeff Danner and Leslie Curran, who were at that time council members, and they have been actively involved in the development of the arts community. And they have been working on the Central Avenue Trolley and a number of things that have helped pull the arts community together. But we started this idea of moving people around in the Warehouse Arts District with the trolley. And initially, it was the different arts organizations within the association that were paying the bill for all of this. And it was a classic case of build it and they will come. And we started moving people around. And it the energy from that grew, and the trolley route grew, and ultimately it evolved to incorporate the entire arts community all the way down to Beach and all of the five different districts. Through the course of that, the Downtown Arts Association grew and became the Arts Association of St. Petersburg, representing a broader range of variables there. And we also developed, through the city's help, the St. Pete Arts Alliance. And they have really helped to function as an umbrella organization to help bring all the different districts together, coordinate creative energies, and all of these different pockets now are working together to help create a St. Petersburg arts community. Yeah. And it's being marketed that way. The SPAA has been getting funding together for sponsorship for the trolley so that it's no longer borne on the backs of the artists and the arts organizations in the area. And it continues to grow, and it's thriving right now. It's very exciting.
And they're doing a great job over there, too.
Wonderful. Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, wonderful. Listen, so if somebody wants to learn more about MGA Studios and your projects and so on, what's your website?
The website for MGA is mgasculpture.com.
Okay. Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for being my guest here today and letting everyone know about this great project that's coming up. Everyone's talking about it that I talked to. And
well, thank you very much, Dean. Thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my guest today, Mark Ehling, and I do hope he'll come back as the Enclave or whatever you name it does come online there.
Absolutely. Love to. Thank you.
We'll keep our audience in touch with that as well. So anyway, that was my guest, Mark Ehling, the owner of MGA Studios and the driving force behind the Enclave in the Warehouse Arts District. So be sure to check out the website, and if you're looking to for a commission, you know, a fantastic work of art, you definitely want to contact Mark. If you've been to a studio, you'll know what I'm talking about. And so anyway, I want to thank all of you for listening to Job Talk and for tuning in to RadioSt.Pete.com. You should check out the great music and the other local musicians who are featured here, as well as interesting programs like Suncoast Tiger Bay Luncheons, and Will Kuhn's interviews are really good. And there's Charlie Jewell does some great reviews on his show there, too. So you want to take a look at the audio archive section, where you can listen to all the great shows. That's RadioStPete.com. So you can download the free app and listen anywhere you take your phone, tablet, or computer. So check it out. If you like what you hear, please listen again and tell your friends. If you have any suggestions for guests or have any job-related questions, please send an email to us at RadioStPete.com. I'll answer your questions on the next program or call you directly. I'll get to all of you who write in, and thanks again for your suggestions. I want to take this time to thank Joe, Chuck, Richard, Harry, my engineers Dan and Sean, and all the Eagles for their help. And I want to end this Job Talk with a final thought and say to anyone in the country that if you're thinking about relocating your family or business and are looking for a great place to live, work, and play, you should definitely come visit and take a look at all St. Pete and Tampa Bay has to offer. I'm glad I did. I think you'll be glad you did, too. So anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, this is Dean Logan. Take care.
You have been listening to Job Talk with Dean Logan, a presentation of RadioSt.Pete.com and Eagle Datagistics. Eagle Datagistics is one of the premier Oracle Gold partners on the East Coast, providing hardware and software sales, data recovery, DBA services, and recruiting. With more than 10 years in business, Eagle Datagistics in downtown St. Petersburg. Job Talk with Dean Logan came to you live from our studios inside Eagle Datagistics on the 10th floor of the Plaza Tower in downtown St. Petersburg.
RadioSt.Pete.com.